Good evening, Madam Chair. My name is Malvika Apte. I would be presenting this area in need study, which my office did prepare. We have a report that stated October 27th, 2022. So I'll be providing a brief synopsis of that report and, you know, present the area in need study. All right. I think you're telling me to proceed, so I'm going to proceed. Mr. Barlow, is it okay if I share my PowerPoint presentation?
Of course. You're going to be sharing parts of your October 27th report?
Exactly. Just that. Okay. I've just put it in a PowerPoint format, so nobody has to keep staring at my face. They can actually see the plan.
Go right ahead.
All right. Just one second, please bear with me. I want to make sure, because I have two screens, that you guys are looking at the presentation. If somebody can just confirm that for me, that
yes,
you are looking at that. Okay, thank you. Sorry. There it is. All right. So as I mentioned, I'm here to present the area in need of redevelopment study for block 6201, lot 6.02, block 7.01, lots 2.02 and 2.03. I'm sure all of you are very familiar with these three properties. It's in the central west portion of Township of Piscataway. In all, the study area is approximately 117 acres, and it's located, or more familiar known as, the Erickson Drive area. To begin this study, the governing body, the Township Council, prepared a resolution and adopted a resolution around October 6th, directing Planning Board to prepare this area in need of redevelopment study. They'd also directed that this would be a non-condemnation area in need of redevelopment study, and in turn, Planning Board authorized CME to prepare this study. What you see before is an aerial map showing the three properties. This is in our October 27th, 2022 report. Very briefly, so the three properties, as you can see, two of them front on Hose Lane, one is on Skiles Avenue. Very briefly, the properties are currently within what we call the town center zone and the business professional zone of the Township of Piscataway. The lot 6.02, as you can see, which is the northernmost lot, is currently vacant. It has an Erickson Drive access easement going through the property along its western property line, as well as it is mostly vacant and developed with trees. At some point between 1995 or 2002, there used to be an existing building on that property that was demolished. And ever since then, the property has remained essentially vacant. Lot 2.03, which is towards, which has the maximum frontage on Hose Lane, is a corner property. It has about 2,000 feet frontage on Hose Lane, and then part of it is on Skiles Avenue. This property is currently developed with about four buildings, which are between one story to three story buildings, office buildings, and an excessive amount of sea of parking, around four parking lots. Then the third property, which we call block 7.7401, lot 2.02, we referred to it as the rear property because that essentially what it is. It only has a 290-foot frontage on Skiles Avenue, and most of the property is to the rear of lot 2.03. This property is also very familiar, I'm sure, because this is the property that contains the 11-story currently vacant office building, which I believe is one of the tallest building in Township of Piscataway. So it's almost like a landmark for the township. It is surrounded by a sea of parking. There used to be another building on this property, which has recently been demolished. And towards the southern portion of the property, there is an existing one-story storage building. There is an electric substation. Most of the western portion of this property is currently vacant, with a helipad on the western portion of the property. In terms of environmental constraints on this entire study area, Lot 6.02, there is some presence of wetlands, again, through state mapping that we found out along its northern portion of the property. And 2.02 has an extensive amount of wetland along its western portion of the property. There was the 2.03 property currently has the NJEMS, which is essentially environmental monitoring system going on. Other than that, there was no known contamination on this property that was found. During this study, we also review the township's tax maps, we review township's zoning map, we review township's all kind of violation notices, as well as any other information relevant redevelopment plans and studies for this property. I'm going to go through that individually for each property. We also looked at the township of Piscataway's master plan. The most recent comprehensive master plan was done in 2005, following which in 2020, we had the re-examination report done. What that tells us is, what are the goals and objectives for the township? The 2020 re-examination report just generally reaffirmed the goals of 2005, which basically says we want to promote efficient land use planning. We want to create adequate community facilities for its residents. We want to promote a strong sense of community and kind of create a town center for our township. We also, in our review, we look at the state development redevelopment plan, which identifies this property in a PA1 zone, which is essentially infill growth area, where basically the state has said these are the areas that is identified as already has existing infrastructure, and they recommend redevelopment or growth replanting of this area. These are some of the pictures. What we are achieving with this area and need study is we are trying to decipher if individually each of this property meets one of the 8 criteria that are listed in our local redevelopment and housing law, or Section 3, which I'll get into a little bit later, and can be designated as non-condemnation area in need of redevelopment. So these are just few images which can be found in our report, in the appendices of the report. These are the 8 categories. Again, I have kind of given it a more easy read. The local redevelopment housing law goes into exactly what they mean for each criteria. The first criteria is deterioration, or basically buildings that are deemed as unsafe and dilapidated. The second criteria has to do with abandoned commercial buildings that have remained vacant for at least consecutively 2 years and are almost in a state of disrepair that they can't be tenantable anymore. The third criteria has to do with a land that is owned by municipality, by any public entity, or also an unimproved vacant lawn that has remained so for more than 10 years and that has not developed just by private capital alone and needs some kind of needs a public-private partnership. Criteria D has to do with any buildings or site that in today's modern land use planning standards can be deemed as obsolete layout and designed, and that would kind of meet that criteria. Criteria number E or 5 has to do with properties that have some kind of condition of titles or diverse ownerships, and because of which they haven't been developed over the years. Criteria F, or over here six, has to do with fires and natural disasters, you know, properties or buildings that have suffered any kind of fire or natural disasters can be designated through that criteria. Criteria F has to do with areas that are in the urban enterprise zone and can be designated under this criteria. And criteria 8 is smart growth consistency. Section 3 basically is what we call a donut in a hole situation, where you need to add this property by itself. The property can't meet any of the criteria, but the property is very essential in a comprehensive redevelopment plan. So according to the LRHL, a property has to meet only one of these eight criteria or section three to be designated as area in need of redevelopment. Through this study, we have to study each property on its own, unless a Section 3 can be applied to them. Now, I'll briefly describe each property and what we found when we studied the property. Block 6201, lot 6.02. This is that vacant property located on the northern portion of your study area. It has frontage along Hose Lane as well as Knightsbridge Road. This property is about 28 acres in size, and it is an irregularly shaped lot. A review of aerial images showed that at some point this property was developed with a structure. However, somewhere between 1995 to 2002, that appears to have been demolished. There are several easements noted on the property that has to do with access easement, which is essentially your Erickson Drive. It has a couple of drainage easements on the property. It also has the varied width slope easement along the Hose Lane frontage. The property itself is in the Zone X, which is the area of minimal flood hazard. However, as I'd mentioned before, along the northern area of the property, there were some wetlands noted. In our review of township records, we discovered that there was only one violation that has been issued on this property, and that had to do with clearing of trees without permits. No other violations have been noted. It is also interesting to note, at one point, this property was designated in 2014 as an area in need of redevelopment. However, a redevelopment plan was not adopted. The property itself, however, has been noted in the TC, what we call the town center zone, which basically permits, a mixed use type of development, where we would have commercial supporting residential development at almost 12 dwelling units to the acre. So it is interesting to note how that for such a long time, even with this property being having access to all types of infrastructure and being located in the town center zone, hasn't seen development for almost 20 years now. We think our analysis shows this property can meet criteria C, which is our properties that has remained vacant for more than 20 years and will most likely not be developed through only private partnership, only through private capital, and will need to be developed through a public-private partnership. We also designate this property under criteria. We also recommend this property be designated under criteria H, which we call the smart growth principle. Again, the location of the property, it is in one of the more commercially viable corridors of Township of Piscataway. It already has existing infrastructure. It is, according to the state plan, in the PA1 zone. It's ideal for an infill site for a compact and efficient development. So our recommendation would be that this property to be designated as an area in need of redevelopment under criteria C and H. Now we look at the next property, which is block 7401, lot 2.02. This is the property which I earlier mentioned, we call it as the rear property. And again, that's only because it does have frontage, but only a very minimal frontage of 290 feet on Skiles Avenue. The site is currently developed with a large parking lot. It does have that iconic 11-story, currently vacant office building for Township of Piscataway. It also is developed on the southern side with one electrical substation, as well as one-story building, which seems to have dilapidated over the years and used for some kind of storage. To the western portion of this property, it's mostly vacant with only one helipad there. Our review of the property showed that the parking lot, again, because of its excessive land coverage, seems to have seen some kind of state of disrepair over the years. The main building, the 11-story building, is currently vacant and has remained so for, I believe, since 2016, if not before that. The property has received a maintenance violation, again, because of overgrowth of weeds, and this appears to be an ongoing issue, as we have noted from the township records. The property, again, was designated in 2014 and is in the town center zone. These are some of the images of the property. There was another building on this property right next to that tower, which has since been demolished. I believe somewhere between October 2020 to April 2022 is when it was demolished. Our redevelopment analysis showed that this property, we would recommend this property be designated under it almost three criterias. Again, remember, it needs to meet only one criteria. Criteria B, which is basically a discontinuance of any kind of commercial or office buildings that has remained vacant and is almost untenable for a period of at least 2 years. Clearly, this property has remained vacant. The 11-story tower is vacant. It's interesting to see how single tenant office building is no longer a modern land use planning standards. You almost would see, for a commercially or economically viable property, you need to create a live, work, play atmosphere. And just having these office parks with sea of parking around us is no longer creating an attractive commercially viable property. So we also believe that this meets that under criteria D, or of an obsolete site layout. The property also meets criteria H, again, smart growth. When you assemble a couple of properties together and come up and create a more comprehensive, compact, efficient land use development, it would meet the H criteria for this property. Now, the third property, which is identified as block 7401, lot 2.03. This is the property with the largest frontage, around 2,000 feet along Hose Lane. It also has frontage along Skiles Avenue. This property is fully developed with almost four parking lots. It does have a couple of buildings, again, ranging from three-story to one-story building. Our review of the site showed that what we identify as building six, you can see on this top photograph, was the only one that was currently tenanted with a couple of other different types of offices. The other three buildings on the property are essentially almost vacant. Over the years, the property has received various kinds of violations, starting from fence installation to zoning violations to needing to obtain a site plan for any kind of rehab or redevelopment on the property. We also reviewed the police records. Again, there have been many minor police activities on this property. However, they have been almost about 29 calls, be it, you know, just hang-up calls, or be it some kind of minor offenses, or sometimes theft of the building being vacant on the property. We think, again, the property meets two of the criteria, criteria D. Again, going back to, you know, having an office park with the sea of parking doesn't seem to meet a modern land use park standard. It almost seems like an obsolete layout. You need to create a mixed use type of development where you can have symbiotic land uses on the property for that to be commercially viable redeveloped property. We also feel this property would meet the criteria H, which is the smart growth planning principle for creating a more compact land use planning development. This is the conclusion where we studied each property on its own, and we think it meets at least two of the criteria out of the eight criteria that it needs to meet under the local redevelopment housing law. This has been a very brief synopsis. Again, our report has more comprehensive information. It also has all the fact records that we collected, be it the violation records or be it previous designation and so on and so forth. Overall, I would conclude and recommend for this planning board to recommend that these three properties be designated as an area in need of redevelopment under the various criteria I described. So that's a short presentation. If anybody has any questions, I would be happy to answer. Thank you. I'm going to stop sharing the screen so this way everybody can see each other, and then.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, if I may, if I could, Malvika, you said that there had been a building on one of the properties that had been demolished. I think it was in the first parcel. I apologize. I know you said when it was, but I apologize. How long ago was that demolished?
So the if you're talking about the northernmost, which is currently vacant, we can't really sell. Again, we looked at the aerial images, so we feel it's between 1995 to 2002. We can't pinpoint exactly when the demolition took place.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Madam Chair, you're muted.
Any other questions from the board?
Madam Chair, Reverend Kenny.
Go ahead, Reverend Kenny.
In regards to those buildings, there, it seems to me, in according to your reports, most of those buildings are disarray. They would have to come down, and we had to start all over to rebuild or get a developer, whatever we plan to do, to reconstruct that whole area, so to speak. Is that correct?
So, I mean, what we looked at the property, I didn't say they are, not habitable. They do seem to be untenable right now because of the, the layout, because of them being only office parks, which was more of a 90s land use rather than today, where we want to see more, a mixed use type of development where you would have commercial, retail, as well as office use. So part of our review is, why are these, office buildings, even if they were rehabbed today, why are they still remaining vacant? Is probably because of, the obsolete site layout.
Right. Well, that type of building, especially a larger building, that 11 story, they don't have that type of a building anymore for office space, commercial use. That is an obsolete building altogether. But that's my only question. I didn't know. I've been by in and out of that complex for quite a while. quite a few years, but I never really got inside to look at those buildings, except when they were taking things out. I don't know what the inside looked like, condition of the building. That's what I was asking. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other member of the board have questions? Hearing no questions, Ms. Buckley, can we open this to the public now?
If anyone in the public has any questions or comments, please raise your hand and I will unmute you. No one's raising their hand.
Okay, close to the public. Okay, are there any more, finally, before we get to a recommendation? Are there any other questions from anyone who has heard this recommendation from Ms. Atke? Seeing no response, I put the put it before the board. What is your pleasure? Do you see that this is Ms. Atke has made the case that this is an area in need of redevelopment, non-condemnation?
And just so the board's clear, what would be is a it be a motion to for a resolution recommending to the Township of Piscataway Township Council consider designating it an area in need of redevelopment, non-condemnation, or not.
Or not. Would someone please make that motion if they so desire?
Madam Chair, Dawn Corcoran, I'll make that motion.
That's a motion for recommendation of a non-condemnation area in need of redevelopment. Do I hear a second?
Reverend Kenny, I'll second that motion.
Thank you. Roll call, please.
Mayor Waller?
Yes.
Councilwoman Cahill?
Yes.
Ms. Corcoran?
Yes.
Reverend Kenny?
Yes.
Mr. Atkins?
Yes.
Mr. Foster?
Yes.
And Madam Chair?
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Atkins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Barlow.
Madam Chair, I may have missed it. I'm not sure on the agenda, and Laura will correct me if we ever adopted the minutes.
No, we did not.
No.
Number 9.
You skipped it.
Just didn't want us to lose track of that.
We don't want to lose track of that.
All right, so who wants to
excuse me?
Oh, go ahead, Madam Chair.
Returning to item number 9, just backing up a little bit. Adoption of the minutes from the regular meeting of October the 12th, 2022. Do I have a motion to adopt the minutes?
Reverend Kenny, I'll make a motion to adopt the minutes.
Do I have a second?
I second it.
Thank you. Roll call, please.
Councilwoman Cahill?
Yes.
Ms. Corcoran?
Yes.
Reverend Kenny?
Yes.
Mr. Atkins?
Yes.
Mr. Foster?
Yes.
And Madam Chair?
Yes.
Thank you.
Item number 11, discussion. Redevelopment plan for block 1701, block 2.03, also known as 4100 New Brunswick Avenue. Property is located on page 17, on the Piscataway Township tax map. We have a discussion regarding that property.
Yes, good evening, members of the board. James Clarkin here from Foresight Planning. How are you all?
Hope you're doing well. How are you, Mr. Clarkin?
Good. Good to see you all again. So I will be presenting that redevelopment plan for you. So if it's okay, mm-hmm. I'll go ahead and share my screen.
Okay.
So we can kind of follow along with my report. I'm actually going to start at the end of my report because it has the map. So I can kind of give you all a brief synopsis of what we're looking at here. So as stated, this is block 1701, lot 2.03, better known as 4100 New Brunswick Avenue. This is actually in the eastern part of the township, right on the border with South Plainfield. In fact, New Brunswick Avenue right here going north-south is the actual border between Piscataway and South Plainfield. So just across the street from this is South Plainfield Borough. To your south is Stelton Roads. You have a Stop and Shop here, and 287 is less than a mile away. Some other existing uses nearby are some residential uses to the north, and then a vacant site to the west. This is in your M5 industrial zone, and it is approximately 11.72 acres. If you recall from the in-need study that was prepared, there currently is a use on the property that is somewhat of a blend of manufacturing and warehouse, but it's a 100,000 square foot building right about here. And it's really almost entirely surrounded by an existing parking lot, tons of parking. In my in-need study, it was actually found that it was probably too much parking. But nonetheless, in August of this year, the Township Council adopted by resolution that the property does in fact meet the criteria for in need of redevelopment. So this allowed for myself to prepare this redevelopment plan for you for the said property. So now that we have a little bit of background, I'm going to skip up a couple pages to actually to page 5, if I may, so that I can kind of, not page 5. excuse me. Yeah, here we go. This is what I'm looking for. Plan goals and objectives. So out of these goals and objectives, I just want to highlight a couple. So the first is really we want to create land use requirements specific to this redevelopment area, this property specifically, so that we can effectuate its redevelopment in such a way that improves the area and benefits the redevelopment area. We also want to utilize best practices of zoning, of planning and engineering so that it fits in with the existing neighborhood and the zone that it's currently in, which is M5 industrial. And then finally, this is what it's the use for the property is actually envisioned to be a warehouse. So the last goal is to provide modern industrial warehousing uses and facilities in the redevelopment area. So moving on to the land use plan, as I mentioned, the principal permitted use for this redevelopment is warehouse. So just one warehouse structure on the principal use on the lot. Also consider for permitted accessory uses are pretty typical for such a facility. So you have your off-street parking and loading, offices within the warehouse structure, guard houses if necessary, signs, gates, fences, emergency generators, electric charging stations as required by ordinance in the state. Also solar energy systems are permitted as it can, well, under the current zoning is conditional use. So this would be permitted accessory use now. And anything that would be considered customary or incidental to such a warehouse use. Prohibited uses, anything expressly not permitted herein. We definitely do not want any storage or warehousing of hazardous and dangerous materials, and definitely no outdoor storage of materials or product. So as I mentioned before, this is in your M5, so the use does fit in with the existing zoning. So I'm going to move on to the redevelopment area bulk standards. So these bulk standards were created specifically for this property, its unique characteristics, but specifically to make sure we could fit a modern warehouse use on the site without overburdening it, and that it fits in with how it was previously used. So plenty of minimum lot width and depth because it is quite a large parcel at 11 acres, but we do want a good amount of setbacks. So we have 80 feet for the front from New Brunswick Avenue, 50 feet off the back, and then 50 on the sides. Structure can be no more than 55 feet, maximum impervious coverage, no more than 75% of the total area. So that would include building, parking lots, circulation, everything. And then the building itself has to have a minimum floor area of 100,000 square feet. And then the rest of the table is really just making sure that the parking stalls and the loading spaces are adequately sized to fit today's, you know, tractor trailers and cars. And also to make sure the parking lot is set back from the property lines. So with that, I'm going to move on to page 8, which is actually the next one. I just want to touch on a couple more of requirements of this redevelopment plan. I'm specifically talking about traffic analysis and design. This is pretty typical, but we want to make sure that any site plan that comes before your board that would try to implement this redevelopment plan is making sure that it's taking a look at what the traffic impacts would be, how many trucks would be coming onto the site, can the existing roadway handle that, look at levels of service. It does have a good route to 287, so that should not be a problem, but nonetheless, we want to make sure that both the site and the circulation can accommodate such a use. And then, as always, parking is very important. So looking at this warehouse use, this is pretty typical for what we've done for past warehouse redevelopment plans. So we're doing one space per 3,000 square feet of gross floor area. And then we want to make sure we account for any office use that's within that building. So that's one space per 200 square feet of gross floor area, which is pretty typical. And then we want one loading space per 5,000 square feet. We want to make sure there's plenty of or enough tractor trailer spaces provided so that you're not having tractor trailers stored offsite, or not offsite, but not where they should be. And then finally, a minimum of 3 ready-made electric charging stations will be required for this project if they go to site plan. And then to wrap it up, just pretty standard boilerplate language for utilities, solid waste disposal. I do, so this would be page 10. I have some signage requirements. We're allowing 2 monument signs. We're allowing wall signs on the finished facade that can't exceed 150 square feet. And then lighting, we want to make sure the parking lot's adequately lit. But most of these will really get into the details on site plan. So especially things like landscaping. But I did include that we want some landscaping put in the front yard on New Brunswick Avenue to, make sure you can possibly break up the large building walls that sometimes comes with warehouse. And then to wrap it up, I did review your master plan, but also the borough of South Plainfields, because if you're within 200 feet, you need to look at that to make sure it's consistent. And I did find that this redevelopment plan is consistent with both those master plans.
Okay.
There were goals and objectives that this will meet. And I think, and also your county, Middlesex County and state plan is also consistent with this redevelopment plan. So overall, I think this redevelopment plan allows the township to properly redevelop the site with a modern warehouse facility. And I think it'll allow a chosen redeveloper to implement this plan. So with that, I can take any questions you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Clarkin.
Mm-hmm.
Board members, do you have any questions of Mr. Clarkin regarding his report?
Madam Chair, I actually do. Jim, on New Brunswick Avenue in front of this property, this is one of the few properties that does not currently have sidewalks out in front, and it's right next to a Conrail spur. And in order to have the DOT freight division do an upgrade of that railroad crossing, you have to have a sidewalk right there. So I strongly suggest that we make sure that it is in the plan, allowed to add a sidewalk in so we can prod the DOT freight division to do a safety upgrade of that grade crossing next door for pedestrian movement.
Absolutely, Mr. Mayor, that's a good point. So typically, and it is actually in here, I forgot to touch on it. So back to traffic analysis and design on page 8, towards the bottom of the paragraph, I did require a minimum should incorporate 5 foot wide sidewalks along New Brunswick Avenue. So that requirement is in there. I usually keep it in there because we want sidewalks, but that's good to know about the freight division.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions of the board?
Madam Chair, if I may, it's Councilwoman Cahill. So Mr. Clarkin, hi. The mayor pointed out the need for the piece of the sidewalks to be in there, which it is. Is there anything else in there to note for this board to be aware of in terms of requirements other than, are the typical aesthetics of the build, just our typical ordinances is there anything else in there? I mean, I don't know, Mr. Mayor, if there had to be anything with right-of-ways or anything of that nature, you know, where we don't want our residents to incur, you know, the fees where, you know, we always ask our corporate neighbors to do their part to alleviate that. I just want to make sure if there's anything else other than the sidewalks that this board should be made aware of out loud right now that you do.
I think, actually, that does. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Mr. Mayor.
I think this question's really to Dawn. I'm assuming we're getting the half width of the master plan out there on New Brunswick Avenue.
So this is, as you know, Mr. Clarkin just presented the redevelopment plan to this board. Once a developer has been designated, they have to come back to this board once again with the site plan itself. It is at that time, certainly, where we will pick up request any necessary right-of-way to bring New Brunswick Avenue in compliance with the circulation element of the master plan. Mm. So we will get that when they come in for formal site plan.
Yeah, I totally agree. And actually that your comment, Ms. Cahill, reminded me, there is an existing access easement to mm-hmm. access easement to lot 1.01, which is the Buckeye easement on the southern property line. Mm-hmm. So I did put something in there that any site plan submitted shall honor that access easement.
And that was also part, that was a condition of the approval that was granted by the zoning board. Mm-hmm. Maybe it was last year, I believe. So Mr. Clarkin also incorporated that into the plan just to make sure we have it, not only in the zoning board resolution, but it's here as well. So thank you.
If I may ask another question, Madam Chair.
Sure, go ahead,
Mayor. I think that also that access easement also is for a road to go into the back of the adjacent property, if I correct me if I'm wrong, Dawn.
That is correct.
Okay.
It's Ron Reinerson. Wasn't this application just here a few this property here a few months ago for the parking lot, 4100 New Brunswick?
Yes, they were.
Okay. Yeah. It's one and the same. So I'm not going crazy. I just looked it up. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Board members, are there any other questions before I open it up to the public? Okay, Ms. Buckley, would you ask the public if they would make a comment on this resolution, on this recommendation?
You unmuted me, so.
You don't really.
I'm sorry, I made sure he was unmuted. Brian Reich has his hand up, Madam.
Yeah, Brian Reich, 1247 Brookside Road.
There we go.
Okay. Mr. Reich, is it?
Reich? Oh, I didn't know if you needed to swear me in or not.
You gave your name and address, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. Do we have to swear him in, Mr. Barlow?
Sure. Mr. Reich, you swear the testimony you give before the board will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth to help you God?
Yes.
Thank you. Proceed with your question, please.
I think this is probably more of when the site plan comes in, but exit 5 is a disaster anytime around rush hour. I don't know if there's been any thought given about what adding additional truck traffic around there will do. I mean, it regularly backs up onto 287 these days. So that was really my only question/statement. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you, Brian. I think you're correct. Site plan, like I mentioned before, the traffic analysis and design at site plan, that's when their traffic engineer will prepare a traffic study for the site, and it should look at nearby intersections. But that may be something that the township could work on with the redeveloper to make sure they look at that.
Thank you, Mr. Reich. Is there any other questions?
I don't think anyone else has their hands raised, Madam Chair.
Okay, anyone else? No. Okay, hearing or seeing no hands.
No one.
Close to the public. Okay, that concludes this presentation, I believe, board members. What's your pleasure? Would you like to recommend or not recommend this redevelopment plan?
Madam Chair, Reverend Kenny, on the redevelopment of block 1701 lot 203. I recommend that we go forward with the redevelopment of this property.
Recommend for redevelopment plan. Do I have a second?
I'll second.
Thank you. Roll call, please.
Mr. Atkins.
Mr. Atkins.
Mm-hmm.
Mayor Waller.
He's muted.
Yes.
Councilwoman Cahill.
Yes.
Ms. Corcoran.
Yes.
Reverend Kenny.
Yes.
Mr. Atkins.
Yes.
Mr. Foster.
Yes.
And Madam Chair.
Yes. Do we have a resolution? You want to do the resolution now, Mr. Barlow?
Certainly, Madam Chair. We have a resolution recommending adoption of the redevelopment plan to the Township Council as prepared by Foresight Planning, entitled 4100 New Brunswick Avenue Redevelopment Plan, dated October 23rd, 2022. So if there is a motion to
Move that resolution.
Motion, Councilwoman Cahill.
Thank you. Will I have a second?
Second, Dawn Corcoran.
Madam Chair.
Ms. Corcoran, okay. Roll call, please.
Mayor Waller.
Yes.
Councilwoman Cahill.
Yes.
Ms. Corcoran.
Yes.
Reverend Kenny.
Yes.
Mr. Atkins.
Yes.
Mr. Foster.
Yes.
And Madam Chair.
Yes. Item number 12 is 22PB16/17 Vias and Victor, Tanglewood Terrace LLC for a preliminary and final site plan. Ms. Shulsky.
How are you doing? Good evening. My name is Deborah Shulsky with the firm of Riley Riper, Holland and Colley Greco, here on behalf of the applicant owner, East Coast Tanglewood Terrace LLC. Also wanted to introduce my team to you as well. I have Lauren Workeser with Morgan Properties Management Company, LLC, Justin Bass with Morgan Properties, and he's gonna be our Vanner White tonight displaying our exhibits for you. And we have a representative from our sign company, Rick Crawford, he's right in the middle here. And you may recall, we were before you several months ago, I guess now, at your work session meeting to explain the scope of this application, which we hope you'll agree is fairly benign. This is an existing apartment complex that's been there for a number of years. My client is looking to give it a facelift, which it is well in need of. And the signage is part of those exterior improvements that they're proposing to make. Currently, there exists a double-sided existing freestanding sign, which we are proposing to remove and slightly relocate approximately 9 feet closer to the roadway and replace it with two single face signs, which are generally of the same size. Your ordinance is fairly unique in that the use obviously is a permitted use. The signage is there and has been there for a number of years, but your ordinance really does not specifically address this type of sign, which is a little unusual, but we were told by the zoning department that we needed to seek certain bulk variances to permit this replacement of the existing sign relating to the sign area, even though the face of the sign is essentially the same as what is there. But your ordinance requires calculation of the surrounding monument portion of the sign. So that's essentially the only reason that we would need relief from the area requirements, because the face of the sign itself is fully compliant with that section of the code. Okay. And then we also will need relief from the setback provision to the property line with the relocation of the sign. And our witnesses tonight will walk you through the need for this and some of the visual obstructions situated along the property there that really necessitate us having to move slightly closer up from where the sign currently exists. So with that introduction, if the board has no initial questions for me, what I was going to do is just kind of for purposes of the record, read in my exhibits. I have pre-marked exhibit list, which Justin's going to display. I don't know if you need to share. Does he need something to share the screen? Or okay.
Mr. Bar- there you go.
Thank you, Justin. And and we don't, some of these are kind of more administrative, like housekeeping items, so we don't necessarily need to display them all, but I just wanted to just read them into the record real quick.
You don't necessarily need to do that. What we'll do is, is as he pulls them up, we'll mark them as exhibits. A lot of this stuff is already part of the record, like A1, A2, they don't need to be marked as exhibits.
Okay.
So we can deal with the exhibits as your witnesses utilize something that's not part of the plan.
Okay, certainly. We can do that. And I have a full hard copy that I can mail to Ms. Buckley at the conclusion of this matter. Okay, so with that, I guess we can swear in the witnesses if you don't have any initial questions for me. And I just really have two witnesses, Lauren Workester on behalf of Morgan Properties to essentially establish standing and discuss what they're intending to do with the property. And then we have a representative from our sign company who can walk you through the specific details of the sign itself.
Okay, so you're calling Ms. Worksire as your first witness?
Correct.
Okay, is she gonna be utilizing what's on the screen or can we unshare that?
She will not be utilizing the exhibit list.
Okay, so why don't we, thank you. Ms. Worksire, if you could state your name, spell your last name, and give us your professional address, please.
Lauren Werkiser, last name is Werkis as in Sam, E-R, design director for Morgan Properties, and I am based out of the corporate office, which is at 160 Clubhouse Road, King of Prussia, Pennsylvania, 19406.
Okay, raise your right hand. You swear the testimony you give before this board will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. So help you God.
I do.
Okay, your witness, Ms. Schulsky.
Thank you. Ms. Werkiser, can you explain what your affiliation is with the applicant owner, East Coast Tanglewood Terrace LLC, and Morgan Properties, and explain what the connection is between those two entities?
Yes. Yeah, so again, I am the design director for Morgan Properties. I oversee all interior and architectural design on behalf of the company. And with that, I also oversee signage efforts. And I am representing Morgan Properties and East Coast Tanglewood Terrace LLC as the legal record owner for the property. That's the off-premise sign that's serving. And the property is managed by Morgan Properties, who I work on behalf of.
And you're therefore authorized to appear and make representations at tonight's hearing on behalf of the applicant owner, is that correct?
Yes.
And I had marked Exhibit A4, which is the property deed. Does that confirm the ownership of the subject property?
Yes.
And can you tell the board a little bit about Morgan Properties and some of your other properties?
Yeah, so we were established in 1985. We're a national real estate investment and management company. We currently own and operate a multifamily portfolio of 345 apartment communities now. It's about over 94,000 units across 19 states. We're in the top three largest owners and operators in the country. I think we're currently the largest owner and operators in Pennsylvania, Maryland, and New York. And we have about 2,300 employees nationwide. So we've been doing this for a while. We're in a lot of different municipalities and states, but we also operate up and down, north to south in the state of New Jersey. So, you know, very familiar with a lot of the rules and regulations in the state of New Jersey. And we've been operating, you know, within this municipality for a while.
Okay. And how long has the applicant owned this particular property, the apartment complex here?
15 years. So it was 15 years, September 28th, 2007, when we purchased it.
And are you familiar with the subject property, its features, the proposal, and the general surrounding area of the property?
Yes.
Okay. I'm referring to Exhibit A5, which is an aerial, which, Justin, you can display that. Can you identify the location of the property that's the subject of this evening's hearing?
Yes.
Okay, we're going to mark that as A1, though. So.
Okay.
Don't confuse the record by
glowing. Oh, you might be confusing my notes.
Sorry about that. So this is A1.
A1, okay.
right, so I'm going to read my blurb that I have here. So property known as Tanglewood Terrace, large multifamily residential complex located in the RM zoning district. It's comprised of approximately 13.5 acres. It has 214 dwelling units. There are three separate entrances. There are two off of Tanglewood Drive, one off of Old New Brunswick Road, which connects to Lennox Drive. And Lennox Court is where the signs are that we're looking to locate for this application this evening.
Okay. And the area that's generally surrounding the property, can you describe some of those uses?
Yeah, so it's mainly surrounded by predominantly other multifamily complexes, but there are also some single family residences as well.
And you mentioned that the application before the board is limited to the signage, specifically that one replacement sign at the main entrance of the apartment complex, correct?
Yes.
And the sign vendor will explain in more detail for the board, but can you generally explain why the sign is being updated?
Yes. So recently we refinanced at this property. So we were able to get a decent amount of funding to make some overall general enhancements and improvements. So as part of our enhancement efforts, we took a look at the community, identified just some general areas where we really wanted to make some improvements. And one of them is, you know, we don't really have a significant or a main entrance of note here. And, you know, with a lot of the new competition in town is directly across the street and new construction, obviously we're an older community. So we wanted to compete a little bit and also just enhance the overall curb appeal and the general look of the community for our residents and also for the surrounding area. So one of the things that we took a hard look at was obviously our curb appeal and our signage. And in addition to that, our leasing office was an old apartment that basically was converted a very long time ago prior to us even buying the community. So, you know, if you were to build a community today, you would have a very identifiable clubhouse of note that you could easily, you know, drive into and note, okay, here's the clubhouse, here's an office. So, you know, we really are looking to create more of a grand main entrance. It's identified by signage so that you know, when you drive in, you can identify also our leasing office, which is basically, again, as I mentioned, a unit that was converted, that we've done our best to try and highlight, you know, and make pop in essentially from, you know, other units that are within the community. So with that sparked kind of this conversation, and with the additional funding that we were able to receive, that started, you know, the snowball efforts of looking to enhance the signage. And we felt, you know, this was a great opportunity to do that. And that's, you know, really where we are today. And we haven't touched that sign since we bought the property in 2007, other than just refacing it.
That's all the questions I have of this witness.
Oh, thank you. Members of the board, do you have any questions of this witness? Okay, seeing no hands, Ms. Buckley, would you open it to the public and see if they have any questions of this witness?
No one's raising their hand, Madam Chair.
No, thank you. Close to the witness.
Madam Chair, if I may, it's Dawn Corcoran.
Sure.
Ms. Schulsky, which of your professionals will be addressing the reports?
That will be Mr. Crawford, who will be testifying next.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, then Ms. Schulsky, you can call your next witness.
Okay, my next witness would be Richard Crawford.
Mr. Crawford?
Sorry, I was muted. Mr. Crawford, if you could state your name, spell your last name, and give us your professional address, please.
Richard Crawford, C-R-A-W-F-O-R-D, address 302 North Washington Street, Orwigsburg, Pennsylvania. Don't ask me to spell that. 17961.
Could you spell the town for me?
Believe it or not, I'm getting my card. Yes. O-R-W-I-G-S-B-U-R-G. Orwigsburg.
You got that, Ms. Buckley? Okay. If you could raise your right hand, sir. You state the testimony you give before the board will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. So help you God.
I do.
Your witness, Ms. Schulsky.
Thank you. Mr. Crawford, with whom are you employed and in what capacity?
I work with Bartouche Signs, and I'm project manager. I'm a sign designer. I do surveys, and I take care of permitting for the company.
I'm sorry, what's the name of the company?
Bartouche, B-A-R-T-U-S-H.
Thank you.
Bartouche.
And Mr. Crawford, can you just describe some of your experience in the sign industry? And Justin, if you want, you can display, well, you're going to have it marked as Exhibit A6, but I believe following Mr. Barlow's numbering, it'll be Exhibit A2, which is CV of Rick Crawford.
Yeah, I've been in the sign industry since 1983. I've worked with Bartouche Signs since 1998. I also have a consulting company, Mercer Sign Consultants, where I help sign owners with and towns with sign zoning problems. I'm an attorney licensed to practice in Pennsylvania, and I'm on the board of directors of a national sign foundation that does research on signs, the United States Sign Council Foundation. We've done about 20 research projects on the design characteristics of signs, and I have personally managed all of them. And I'm the co-author of the most recent American Planning Association publication, Street Graphics and the Law, which some of your planning people may be familiar with.
And have you testified in a number of municipal proceedings with respect to signage?
Yes. I have to think about it, but yes. In New Jersey, in this area, Branchburg Township, West Windsor Township, Holmdel Township, Borough of Eatontown, Hillsborough Township, Raritan Township are examples.
And are you familiar with the subject property and its features and the proposal as well as the surrounding area?
Yes.
Are you also familiar with the applicable regulations of the Piscataway Township Zoning Ordinance?
Whether they're applicable or not, but yes.
Can you describe for the board the existing freestanding sign that's the subject of the application, including the size, general dimensions, appearance, and location of the sign? And I know we have an exhibit which will help you walk the board through this sign package of the proposed and existing signage consisting of four sheets, which we will mark as Exhibit A3.
This is the new sign. I'm going to talk about the existing sign. Yeah, that one. Yeah, so the existing sign is what we call a faux monument. It's a man-made monument made to look like it's masonry. It's sort of a drive-it process. It's double-sided. There's signage or panels on both sides. It's not internally illuminated. It has external illumination. What is generally considered the sign area is 29.32 square feet. If you count the whole monument, you're at 43.64 square feet. That's the entire structure. And it sits about 28 feet back from the curb.
And in terms of the location of the existing sign, are there any obstructions along the property frontage that limit its visibility?
Yeah, so this is the first thing that I surveyed when I went out in the early spring. It sits in a big grass area. It's not located near an entrance. And the view of the sign is obstructed by trees along Old New Brunswick Road and vegetation.
Can you explain for the board what's proposed with respect to the replacement sign?
Yes, so I was tasked with figuring out how to create a suitable entrance for the property. And the applicant wanted to put two single-sided signs at the entrance. Pardon me?
Mr. Foster? Continue, Mr. Crawford.
Okay. We have two single-sided signs at what will be the main entrance versus one double-sided sign. The thought behind that is two single-sided signs essentially equal, a double-sided sign. Drivers can't see both sides of a single-sided sign, and they will only see one side. So this creates an entranceway and marks the property and is an updated design. So they're trying to beautify the entrance. The signs are proposed as internally illuminated. However, only the letters light up. So that black background is not illuminated. And then instead of wood, we use Trex to create the same wood-like appearance because it lasts a lot longer. We use this as an exhibit, but the letters will not be raised like this. They will be pushed through the metal face. So they push through about a quarter of an inch.
Mm-hmm. And will the face of the sign itself actually be below what the ordinance requirement is with respect to the maximum size?
Yes. So I looked at all of this when we were creating the design, what was in the code, thinking that the 28 square feet of the proposed new sign would be under the 32 that applied to churches, hospitals, non-public schools, and other permitted institutions. So we are at 28 square feet, a 4x7. If you count the whole monument, it's 54.64 square feet. But our thinking was, and also in relation to the existing sign, that this sign would be slightly smaller than the existing sign and be code compliant.
And the sign is also proposed to be slightly relocated from the existing location, correct?
Yes, the desire was to place the signs at Lenox Court to create an entrance, to mark the entrance clearly for motorists.
Okay. And let's mark this, what Justin is showing here as Exhibit A4. This is a portion of the site plan showing the location of the proposed sign. And then let's mark as Exhibit A5, the next one, Justin, which is photographs showing the proposed sign location consisting of two sheets.
So when I went out to survey, I found a utility pole and I found lots of trees at the entrance, well, all along the roadway. So if we wanted to put a sign at the entrance, it couldn't be behind that utility pole, in my opinion. A, because there would be an obstruction, and B, it would be too far back from the roadway for drivers to be able to see and read the sign. So there's a triangle, if you will, here created with the utility pole out to that tree on the top photograph. And that's where we want to land the sign. We don't want those trees to go away, but we're giving drivers coming in the opposite direction as good a chance as possible to be able to see the sign. So that's why we are mimicking on each side. We're making it symmetrical, but we're in this zone where we're closer to the road than 25 feet back from the property line would permit.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but is the proposed sign proposed to be located 21 feet from the curb line and 10 feet from the property line, correct?
Yes, that's correct. I took the 10 feet back from the property line from other portions of the signs in residential zones. So that code section does contemplate 10-foot setbacks. And since maybe 21-1201, four applies, or maybe it doesn't, it would be within the board's prerogative to say that the 10-foot setback applies.
And are you familiar with other signage with respect to other apartment complexes near the subject property?
Yeah, in general, if you get closer down to 287, there's the Grove at Piscataway, which has a V-shaped sign, which is essentially what we're doing, only they put their V together. We are separating them with the driveway. Okay. There's Carlton Club. That has the same situation. They have two single-sided signs on either side of their entranceway. And then right across the street, there's the Avalon property, which has one double-sided sign.
Right. And that, let's mark that sheet as Exhibit A, A6, what Justin just pulled up. And it looks like that sign is actually has less visibility obstructions to it and looks like it's closer to the road than our proposed sign. Is that your understanding?
Yes, it's a newer development. There are far less obstructions along the roadway. The Avalon sign is closer to the curb than our proposed signs will be.
Okay. And can you explain why the proposed improvements are necessary and beneficial with respect to the signage?
Well, first, it's going to give drivers a better visibility to the sign. So it's going to be easier for people to see and read the signs. And we're not just talking about visitors or potential new residents, but I'm sure there are a slew of delivery people coming to this property at all hours. This will identify the property properly at all times of the day and night, and all types of weather. It promotes safety. It promotes good driving, because it's not just a matter of, we're going to stop accidents. Signs don't cause accidents. But signs can cause inappropriate driving maneuvers, like slowing down, like stopping, like missing a turn and then going up ahead and making a U-turn. And if you make the sign visible and legible, you've eliminated some of those issues, or you've done the best you can. Thirdly, we're going to beautify the entrance. It's going to be a vast improvement compared to the existing sign. So we're going to improve the appearance of the property and the surrounding area.
And you're familiar with the legal standard for the grant of a C variance. I believe some of what you said might weigh into that. Is there anything else that you want to clarify with respect to the positive criteria to satisfy the hardship criteria?
Ms. Shulsky, if I may just interrupt for a second. Mr. Crawford, you're not a licensed planner, are you?
No, but I know plenty.
Okay. And you're not a licensed traffic engineer? You're a sign expert.
I'm a sign expert.
Okay. Ms. Shulsky, I don't think it's appropriate to have Mr. Crawford comment on the positive or negative criteria, the granting of a variance. It's just not within his area of expertise.
Well, he is a licensed attorney as well.
Okay, but you and I are licensed attorneys, and if we tried to give planning testimony, we wouldn't be allowed to.
Understood. Well, I'll move on.
Let me see if I can say this. Based upon my experience in the state of New Jersey, this is a classic bulk and dimensional variance. Classic case.
And do you believe that the proposed signage would have, in your experience, doing this for a number of years with your credentials, do you believe that the proposed signage would have any adverse impact on the character of the neighborhood in consideration of the surrounding area?
No.
Again, I think that's planning testimony, Ms. Shulsky.
Mm-hmm.
I understand why you're asking.
Go ahead.
No, he can give opinions in signs. He can't give opinions in planning or engineering or water runoff or...
Can I give opinion based upon research?
Mm-hmm.
But again, it's not your area of expertise. If I research engineering, I can't give questions on how much water can go through a 10-inch pipe. I mean,
he could offer, and the board could give whatever weight that they deem it to be. He obviously is not. I'm not offering him as an expert in planning. So
I appreciate that, but I don't think he can give any testimony that starts with "it's my opinion." Other than "it's my opinion that this is a nice color palette for the sign," or "it's my opinion as to why I want to interiorly light them." Like, he can give his opinion about the signs, but I don't think he can give his opinion about fitting the character of the neighborhood and positive and negative criteria.
Do you believe, understood, I'll move on. Mr. Crawford, do you believe that the proposed sign will be an improvement to the overall appearance of the apartment complex and in keeping with some of the exterior building improvements that Morgan Properties is proposing to make to the property?
Yes, the sign is in the best, we're proposing the sign in the best location possible. And the alternative would be a sign that would not be visible or legible for motorists.
And did you have an opportunity to review the review letter issued by the Division of Engineering, Planning and Development?
Yes.
And is it your understanding that the applicant is agreeable to complying with item 3, which is the fixing the broken sidewalk, and item 5 regarding removal of certain signage?
That's my understanding.
And is it your understanding some of that signage actually has already been removed as well?
Yes.
And regarding item 5, which is the recommendation as to reducing the size of the sign height, do you have an opinion as to whether it makes sense to reduce the sign height?
Based upon the research studies that I have managed, most of which were done at Penn State at the Pennsylvania Transportation Institute, which is called the Larson now, low-mounted signs are hard or harder for motorists to see. We did one project in regard to minimum sign height. And surprising as that may seem, the view of low-mounted signs, 5 feet, 4 feet high, the view of them is blocked by other traffic to a high degree. And that was the basis of the study. Particularly where you have a four-lane road, where someone on an opposite direction on the outside lane is trying to look across, and they have only maybe 5 or 8 seconds to see the sign. The view of a low-mounted sign is blocked to a degree that motorists can't see the signs. New Jersey DOT has a traffic audit available online from 2019 that they took a look at this afternoon. And it was taken farther down the road at South Randolph Road. But when I look at the numbers, the traffic counts per hour at certain hours of the day, morning and evening, you can have a high degree of blockage if you make this lower. So if you said, well, make it 1 foot lower, I'd say that can't be my recommendation based upon the research. It should stay the height that it is. And in fact, in the study at Penn State, RVs and trucks and SUVs were not even imputed into the study. We just looked at cars. So the higher the sign, the easier it is for motors to see and read the sign. That would be my recommendation.
And regarding item 1, which relates to the dedication of additional right-of-way, is it your understanding that the township's master plan has changed, and as a result, the township's requesting that 19 feet of additional right-of-way along the entire property frontage of applicant's property be dedicated?
That's my understanding, yes.
And if the applicant were to dedicate the additional 19 feet along the entire length of the property, would that then put the proposed sign within the right-of-way?
Yes, as we are proposing it, yes.
And in your opinion, would that create some issues for the owner?
Yeah, you're going to end up with signs in a newly dedicated right-of-way or behind it, if you go with the 25 feet, that won't be able to be seen. That'd be a waste of time. And nor would it be a service to motorists. They won't be able to see them.
And could it also impact some of the other existing area and bulk requirements of the apartment complex in terms of setbacks of existing buildings, impervious coverage, building coverage, those types of things, if an additional 19 feet were taken from the property?
Ms. Schulsky, that's planning testimony. He can't answer that.
Okay. That's all the questions I have.
Thank you. Board members, have you heard the testimony of this witness? Does anyone have any questions? And I'd like to start out with my own question. The height of the letters on the proposed sign, are they larger or the same size or even smaller than the sign that's there now? The letters.
I'm just going by my eye because I don't want to call this up on my design program, but the letters on the proposed sign are larger than the letters on the existing sign. Okay, if you look at the exhibit, it's all on one line right now on that oval, but in the new sign, it's stacked. So the letters could be larger.
Okay, I see. Thank you. Now, Any other board members have questions of this witness?
Madam Chair, if I may, it's not a question, but I would like to circle back to item number one in the report. Just going back to what Ms. Schulsky said, this board wouldn't grant the applicant the right to have a sign in the right of way. So as you're aware, anytime an application is brought before this board, we take a look at our circulation element of the master plan. In this case, the requirement along Old New Brunswick Road is 52 feet. That is why the staff has made the recommendation that the applicant make a 19-foot dedication. Now, if they were to make that dedication, it would be up to this board where that sign should be placed outside of that right of way, whether it be 10 feet, 5 feet. I know Mr. Crawford made a comment that across the street, there's the Avalon, the Grove. Those developments were also required to make this 19-foot dedication to bring this roadway to the 104-foot overall right of way. Those signs are slightly closer due to that roadway dedication. Mr. Crawford, I don't recall if you made any comments about the square footage of those signs across the street and how they compare to the one being proposed this evening. But again, I just want to bring it to the board's attention. This is not something unique that we ask this is of all applicants that appear before our board in terms of the right-of-way dedication. You know, we might be able to work with you in terms of the size of the sign, but waiving this requirement is not something this board tends to do in terms, again, of that right-of-way dedication. I just want to bring that to everyone's, you know, attention and so forth. But ultimately, it's the decision of this board.
Debbie, do you want me to comment on that now, or do you want to?
I
was just going to say, I mean, just from a legal perspective, I mean, I understand what you're saying, and I appreciate the fact that you're trying to treat everyone equally, and I do appreciate that. But I do think our situation is different. When the apartment complex was constructed across the street, it was a raw land site. It's much easier when it's raw land to plan and develop and determine where you're going to put your buildings and your setbacks in relationship to the ultimate right-of-way. Here, it's been an existing apartment complex for a number of years with existing signage, and it just doesn't seem like it's rationally related that there's a nexus between that 19-foot dedication and what the relief that we're seeking tonight. I mean, as I'm sure the board is well aware, there is numerous cases out there that say there has to be some reasonable relationship. There has to be something generated by this particular development that's necessitating the need for immediate road improvements that would justify having to provide, you know, essentially right away without just compensation. So again, we really want to work with the township on this, but 19 feet is really extraordinary amount of land along that entire property frontage, given just the nominal improvement that's being done here, which is simply replacing a sign.
Well, I just want to add to that. I just wanted to add to that really quickly. So, and Ms. Schulsky we tried to talk about this in advance because I know that this is a sticky situation. So I consulted our general counsel in-house to just say, look, what is the process of going about this? And basically, I mean, the overall response is we are totally agreeable to doing this, but the process for us is we have to go to the lender and say, hey, you know, we're looking to dedicate the right of way, and we have to say what it is that we're looking to dedicate. So there has to be some type of plan or some type of proposal that says what this is being dedicated for. And then there's a process. And from what I'm told, it's not a quick process. It could take several months for the lender to get back to us. There's a cost associated with that, you know, that we would incur. And again, you know, our general counsel said they're happy to put a letter together that says that we're agreeable to going down that path if and when plans ever come to fruition, if something were to, you know, happen where there's going to be an expansion or something.
Madam Chair, can I cut this off? This, you know, this is going on too long. If you don't give the right of way up, I'm voting no. I've been on this board for 30 years. We've treated everybody equally. When it comes to the master plan, we get the dedication, end of discussion. So if you guys aren't going to do the dedication, then I'm voting no. Simple as that. And I'll encourage my other board members to vote no too.
I mean, it really...
Counselor,
if I may, can I
push water up the hill on this one?
I'm just saying, we're trying to be reasonable here, but if you have to go through eminent domain 10 years from now because you want to ride the road, you got to pay my client a lot of money.
I'm voting no.
And just to be clear, Ms. Schulze, I didn't want to cut off Ms. Werkheiser before.
Mr. Barlow, can we take a vote on this?
I just wanted to put something on the record. Here. Okay, Mayor, I appreciate that. I just want to put something on the record. You're not just trying to change a sign, because if you were going to just reface a sign, you could do that without going before the board. You want to change the sign and move it to an area that's within the 25-foot setback currently. So this isn't just we want to change the sign. If you wanted to change or reface the sign in its current location, you could do that without having to appear before the planning board. It's the moving of the signs and the placement of them that's triggering the variance relief and the requisite standard. So I just want the record to be clear. We're not just changing a sign. We're moving the signs, and that's what's triggering all this. And that's the only comment I had. If any of the other board members have any questions following up on Mayor Wall.
Your ordinance doesn't address this type of sign. It's under this category that it really doesn't fit within. And there's other districts that allow it to be 10 feet where it is proposed.
We only allow directional signs to be located 10 feet. I mean, they're small signs. We're talking very small signs, you're coming in here, even if it was a 28-foot sign, we wouldn't allow you to have it. The ordinance doesn't allow you to have it 10 feet from the property line.
Dawn, if I may, just again getting back to the issue of the right-of-way dedication. Look, we save our taxpayers' dollars by having our corporate business partners agree to that. Ms. Schulze telling me that we would have, that your client would be eligible to get, quite a bit of money for that right away has no bearing on this board, to be honest with you. What we do on this board in terms of that is ask our business, our corporate partners to do that precisely for the reason of saving the taxpayers the dollars. It has nothing to do whether that I want to do this or that or the other. At the end of the day, that road will have to need improvement. The road may be widened some. And the last thing that this board would be willing to sustain is to pay for that right of way, because that's how we save our taxpayers' dollars. And I'll be quite honest with you. I have a 20-foot right of way in front of my house that I had no say on when my road half width was changed. No one came to me and said, oh, Gabrielle, here's, the money for that. And I didn't even go before a board to argue my point. The point is that these are for the betterment of the society, like sidewalks, et cetera, et cetera. I would venture to say that if the client is agreeable, while it sounds like Ms. Werkheiser is saying that, and there's these other sort of, behind the scenes issues that may delay the project, I might just have you ask your client to table this for a moment, go back to the lender now and ask them exactly what that process is. Because that sounds like to me from Ms. Werkheiser is that that's really the only issue is going to be the delay and how much time it takes for you to advise the lender of sort of this loss of land. And then whatever it's going to take to maybe redo that loan paperwork. That is our goal here. We try to do right by our residents and we try to save them those taxpayer dollars. And I know, the mayor has heard it for 30 years. So he's kind of does not have patience for this. But I just want to give a full explanation as to what is behind this board's adamant sort of stance on that. If I could just be blunt about it, but in a maybe clearer way, perhaps.
And well, I just want to clarify so that I can be clear. We're happy to go to the lender and it's not about time. And we're happy to absorb the cost that's associated with plans and presenting and getting the approval, but we don't know what we're asking for approval for. We have to go to them and say, here's the plans for the right of way.
Well, I think the township would expect you to hire an engineer and survey it and provide all that information. That's my understanding.
Yes.
But what is the right of way for? Like, what are we doing? Are we widening the road? Are we putting in a turning lane? Are we?
I guess that's the other issue too. And again, I mean,
I wasn't
trying to put a gun to your head and saying that we're not going to.
We need people to talk one at a time, please.
Yeah, Ms. Schulze, you're talking over your client, so. The widening of, it's a 19-foot dedication. It's exactly what it says in the report.
But my concern is the 19-foot dedication then puts our proposed sign in that right-of-way. So if you ever go to widen the road, our sign's going to be in the right-of-way.
You can't. Your sign's going to be farther back. You're going to start at the 19-foot dedication and then move the sign back. The relief you would be seeking is whether it's 5 feet from that 19-foot right away or 10 feet or whatever. And that would be what you are seeking the relief from the board. The board can't let you put the sign in the dedicated right away.
So then we're going to have our sign back further than where it is right now.
Yes.
Correct.
Right.
All right. Mr. Crawford, I'm sorry. You had an exhibit before that showed the proposed setback. I believe it was for Avalon and the Grove. Maybe it was around 16 feet. Is that correct?
I think it showed it back from the curb.
From the curb, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, there it is, okay.
I think it was A6.
Yeah, you were from the curb, okay.
Right, so.
So Ms. Schulze, that's what Mr. Barlow was trying to say to you. You cannot, we wouldn't approve of obviously a sign in the right of way, but if in fact your client was agreeable to the dedication, then we would want to know what relief you'd be looking for. Whereas at Avalon, right, you can see, again, this is from curb. Maybe it's 8 feet, maybe it's 7.5 feet from property line.
Right. But see, yeah, Debbie, I guess this all goes back to my original point, but then it doesn't make any sense because we do the plans, we get the approval, we dedicate the right of way, we have to put the sign 19, we can't put the sign in the right of way. Even if you got the right of way, doesn't mean you're actually going to act on it.
What?
So then we would just have a sign that sits really far back from the road.
Madam Chair, I want to make a motion to deny this application. I'm tired of hearing this application. You know, you guys didn't come prepared. You knew the town was asking for this. Your attorney knew this was asking this.
I have been talking to all your various consultants. And
I'm making a motion to deny this application.
Well, Mayor, I appreciate that. But I just think I want just Ms. Schulze to indicate if she doesn't have any further testimony she plans on putting on the record. And we just have to open it to the public and then it would be appropriate for a motion.
I just want to clarify that we have been working in due diligence and good faith trying to resolve this since we became aware of this 19-foot dedication. When we were originally speaking after the planning board meeting that we were at 2 months ago, we were thinking it might be a few feet. We had no idea what the ultimate implication of it with this amount of land. So I have been trying to speak with all your consultants. They've all been very, very responsive to me but nobody has been able to answer that question of what, you know, whether the township would grant us back an easement. If we were to dedicate this, could we then have an easement to have a right to have the sign there? And it sounds like from what you're saying tonight, no, that's not the case. That was the question I was trying to learn before this hearing so that we could properly respond to the board tonight. And we have been really trying to work this out. That's why we gave an adjournment the last year, and we were trying to come up with a resolution so that we could have everything, you know, resolved and discussed this evening.
Right. Mr. Barlow, let's move, see if the public wants to make comments so we come to a conclusion on this.
Can we unshare the screen, please?
Yeah.
Okay, Ms. Buckley, would you, I'm opening the this portion to the public, and would you check and see if anyone has made a motion that they want to ask a question of this witness?
No one's raising their hand.
Thank you. Closed to the public. Where do we go now?
Madam Chair, my motion still stands to deny this.
Is there a second?
I'll second that motion.
Roll call.
Excuse me. Mayor Waller?
Yes.
Councilwoman Cahill?
Yes.
Ms. Corcoran?
Yes.
Reverend Kenny?
Yes.
Mr. Atkins?
Yes.
Mr. Foster?
Yes.
And Madam Chair?
Yes. Okay, the motion has been denied.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, our final item on the agenda. Well, it's not yet the final item. Item number 13, discussion and adoption of the 2023 Planning Board calendar. Ms. Buckley, do you have a proposed calendar?
Everybody got it in their packet, Madam Chair.
Okay, are there any adjustments or changes that the board wishes to make to the proposed calendar at this time? If there is no amendments or adjustments, would someone like to make a motion to accept this as our official calendar for 2023?
Madam Chair, Reverend Kenny, make that motion that we accept it as our official 2023 calendar.
Second?
Body board calendar.
I'll second it.
Thank you. Roll call, please.
Mayor Waller?
Yes.
Councilwoman Cahill?
Yes.
Ms. Corcoran?
Yes.
Reverend Kenny?
Yes.
Mr. Atkins?
Yes.
Mr. Foster?
Yes.
And Madam Chair?
Yes. Do I have a motion to adjourn?
Mr. Barlow?
Don't move, Madam Chair.
Second.
Another resolution?
Do we have a resolution? I'm sorry.
Mr. Barlow, I believe we have a resolution.
Area in need.
Okay.
Oh, okay. Just to go back. The first area need study, I don't think we adopted the resolution, Madam Chair. We did it on the second one. Correct, Laura?
Correct.
Okay.
So we just need a motion to adopt the resolution on the area need study for redevelopment recommending to the Township Council.
Is that the New Brunswick Road? New Brunswick Avenue?
No, that was the discussion for the area in need.
Okay. Do I have a motion to adopt the resolution?
Motion.
Do I have a second?
Second. Dawn
Corcoran. I'll second it, Reverend Kenny.
Okay, roll call, please.
Mayor Waller?
Yes.
Ms. Councilwoman Cahill?
Yes.
Ms. Corcoran?
Yes.
Reverend Kenny?
Yes.
Mr. Atkins?
Yes.
Mr. Foster?
Yes.
And Madam Chair?
Yes.
Voila. Now you could go to your German, Madam Chair.
Okay.
Was there a four-lot subdivision that needed to be memorialized, or was that done earlier?
That was the first.
Gotcha. Just wanted to make sure.
I got it. Thanks, Jeff.
Another set of eyes. Okay.
Our next site plan meeting is November the 23rd, everyone. So motion to adjourn.
Motion.
Motion.
Second?
I second it, Mr. Foster.
All in favor?
Aye.
Everybody has the same privilege. Hearing none, the motion, the meeting is adjourned.
Happy Thanksgiving, everyone.
Yeah.
Yes.
Happy Thanksgiving. Technical review. Happy Thanksgiving.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye, everyone. Good night.
Good night. Get home safe, everyone. That's that.